This is the Past Lives Podcast, episode 207, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Past Lives Podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We will look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. This is the free one-hour version of the episode. The extended episode is an hour and 24 minutes. To get access to the extra 24 minutes and the other extended versions of the episodes, you can join the Past Lives Podcast Patreon campaign. And when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast. And I release new episodes every Monday. And you can find it on almost every podcast app. And there is also a new $12.50 Patreon tier, where every week you can get the extended episodes of the Past Lives Podcast and the Alien UFO Podcast extended episodes. And there are now 50 extended episodes available to the $5 patrons. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me and you're a patron, you'll get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call which can be booked on my website. And look out for the Past Lives Podcast episodes called Paranormal Stories, and they're released every Thursday. The links are in the show notes, and you can find the show notes for this and every other episode on my website. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. This week, I'm talking to Susan J. Wilson about her book, Soul Smart, What the Dead Teach Us About Spirit Communication. Susan Wilson is a scientifically authenticated evidence-based medium and spiritual teacher. She has participated in controlled scientific research with Dr. Gary Schwartz, who says, Suzanne has been one of the best. Her skills as an evidential medium are complemented by her high integrity, credibility, and moral principles. Suzanne's work has also been acclaimed by Victor Zamet, who states, Suzanne Wilson is a world-class medium and spiritual teacher. Suzanne currently serves as Vice President of the Board of Directors for the non-profit Afterlife Research and Education Institute, as well as its Director of Mediumship Education. In addition, Suzanne serves on the Board of Advisors for the non-profit Soulphone Foundation at the University of Arizona. And if that's not enough, she's also had a near-death experience. Hi, Suzanne. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Simon. This is really nice of you.
I wanted to talk to you about your book, which is Soul Smart, What the Dead Teach Us About Spirit Communication, which is a fascinating book. You say that you've been a medium since your birth. What was your first memories of this?
My first memories are seeing lights, colors around people, and then eventually people around people. And by people around people, I mean they were sort of ephemeral looking, shiny, translucent, but I could see them very, very clearly with what we call objective clairvoyance, seeing them as though they're objects in the room versus the subjective clairvoyance where it's only seen in the mind's eye. And frankly, Simon, I just thought everybody could do that for the longest time until I finally started school and found out I was the odd one.
First of all, did you talk to other kids about it and then quickly learn, oh, hang on, I need to be quiet about this?
I learned it seems everything the hard way. And I was bullied at school because I had what you would call a big mouth, meaning I just couldn't stay silent about the things that I saw. And I think that other kids could have tuned in, and every once in a while I would come across the other odd child that would say, oh, I see it too. But for the most part, if I saw someone in spirit behind another child at school, I felt like I had to, I guess, be of service to that spirit. I couldn't ignore them. It felt mean, and I was very, very sensitive. And so I would always call out, there's a lady behind you. She says she's your grandma. And even as a child, they would give me evidence. They would show me something. And that really would freak out that child who wasn't tuned in. I got pushed down a lot. I was always coming home with skinned knees from being pushed down on asphalt. And I had only two really good friends. And it was kind of a rough childhood, but it was an exciting childhood too, because I didn't care about having friends at school, really. I had invisible friends.
And you talked about tuning in there. Is this something that you learn throughout life that perhaps you have to have what you might call time alone or time when you're not being hassled and you think, right, I'm going to tune out now. I'm not working as a medium. I'm just going to have some of my own time and then I'll tune back into it. Or is it something that's not that controllable?
Well, now it is as an adult. Obviously, I had to learn how to shut down. And especially after I had a near-death experience in 2007, I was on all the time. And the teachers I used to go to, secretly, I would go to development circle or classes or workshops and have my real day job. I had to go back to those teachers and say, "Hey, it's not a matter of tuning in now. I need help tuning out because I had this near-death experience, so help me." But as a child, I didn't know of my own power. I didn't know my own agency within to see or not see, to feel or not feel. And it was very confusing until I had someone help me.
Was it a thing with the near-death experience? I've heard it can be, it's like suddenly you've the control's been turned up to 10 and it's almost overwhelming.
Well, having delved into studying a lot of different NDEs or near-death experiences, I have found that it is a lack of recognition of your own agency, your own sovereignty, a lot of times, and then that keeps you from turning it down. You don't realize that you have that authority over your own soul with your own abilities. But it's also a mixed bag because a lot of near-death experiencers don't want to tune out what they're receiving. And so they'll come across as I did, which was I'm stuck seeing, I would see someone at work walk down the hallway and I'd see all these filmy looking apparitions walking behind them. And I found that it was exciting that there would be like a quickening. My heart would go faster. I would feel my soul being uplifted. And so, did I really not have the ability to tune in, tune out, especially tune out? Or was I just so enamored with that very special feeling of oneness that I convinced myself I couldn't tune it out? I think there's a mixture there. Don't you think that's possible?
One of the questions I think you say at the beginning of the book is about raising your vibration. And you kind of say, but what does that really mean?
And that's such a great point because I did two editions of the book. In the first edition of the book, I didn't describe what that meant. And I received a lot of emails from people saying, "You talk about raising your vibe, but you never tell us who, what, why, how, when." And it's really about a change of frequency, about taking your focus off of the materialistic world around you. And I give this example in the second edition, which is, I think, is the only one that anyone can buy now. Hopefully, the old ones are gone. But I talk about Miss Flanagan, my grade school science teacher. I love the science classes. I love to understand how things work, how things are put together. Not so much, cutting in a frog open or anything like that. I always felt like, oh, I don't want to do that. But everything else in science class, I was the nerd. I was the nerdy kid with her hand up in the air at every question first, right? But Miss Flanagan one day showed us what it meant to speed up or raise a frequency. And I don't even know to this day. Wherever she is, I hope Miss Flanagan, you know how much you helped this child. She had a Bunsen burner. Do you remember the Bunsen burners from school? Okay. So it was just like a portable burner. And she had a beaker full of water on the burner. And then she had a glass full of water and a glass full of ice. And she talked about how fast atoms are moving. Water in its natural state is liquid. It flows easily. And that's mostly what we are. We're just flowing through life. When you freeze water, it becomes heavy and dense and ice cubes. And that is the slowing down of the vibration rate of the molecules. They're very, very slow, slow, slow. And that's when we're in worry and fear, right? So you can't drink an ice cube. You can put it in your mouth. You can maybe chew on it, but it's at a very dense, slow rate. And then all of a sudden, the water that was being heated up was boiling and steam was coming out. And she said, look, here's what happens when we speed up the vibration rate of these molecules of water. Would anybody like to come up here and try to capture and drink the steam? And we all just kind of laughed. But the point is, extrapolating from that, once we raise our frequency and we're focused on helpful, hopeful, and healing thoughts, words, and actions, we're like that steam, we're free flowing, we're everywhere. And when we die physically, we're not gone. We're right here, but we're not seen. You cannot, the steam eventually will disappear. You don't see it. So I thought about that for years. She was teaching us about molecules and atoms, and I was getting a spiritual lesson from it. So my belief is that if we focus every day on the positive, wherever we can, and we realize that we're all one, we're all connected, and that God or source or creator is within us, all around us, and connecting us, and we're never apart, that even when we become like the ice cube and everything seems heavy and dense, and you know, I get this phrase once in a while that goes through my head that goes, God, why is everything so hard? And I think of the hard ice cube. I realize that my vibration rate is coming down and slowing. I change my focus. I think about the free flowing water. I think about the steam and how lovely it is that the water never really disappears. We just can't see it anymore. So if you get a good spiritual practice, I posit that no matter what happens to you, and there's always going to be something you perceive as bad happening to you, the peace that surpasses all understanding is always available to you when you change your focus to what is lighter, brighter. And that's the best way I know how to explain raising your vibe.
So in the book, you have something called Soul Smart Principles. So what are they?
I realized when I was writing that book, it was sort of like A to Z, 1, 2, 3, step by step for people who thought, I can't do this. I can't contact my guides myself. I need to get a reading. I can't do this. I can't contact my beloved people and pets myself. I've got to get a reading. I want people to not have to go get readings, maybe once, or attend a demonstration or something, but not get hooked on it. And I was seeing a lot of people saying, you're my 15th reading and you're one of the best. And da, da, da. I'm like, oh my God, why are you spending so much money on readings when you can learn to do this yourself? So I tried to highlight things that were throughout the book that were actually pretty easy and simple, and you could wrap your arms around it and do it yourself in terms of making direct contact without readings.
And when you do the readings yourself, I believe there are five different clairs, clairaudient, clairsentient, these different things. Do you work with all these things or is it something different?
I do. I have not been doing one-on-ones and mediumship because I felt like it's so draining. It's so exhausting. And I'm focusing more on teaching, but I miss the one-on-ones. So I've shifted to doing what I call a spirit guides, ask the spirit guides session. And I'm aiming for a different frequency from departed loved ones. And so my one-on-one work, which eventually I won't be able to do it at all because I'm so busy teaching and I want to write some more, but my one-on-one work has changed. When I was aiming for the discarnates, the beloved peoples and pets, I'm opening up to spirit, and in spiritualism terms, I'm linking and blending when I'm opening up to someone's guides, it's like I'm going to an even, I want to say deeper, higher frequency of those holy men and women and beings who mostly have walked the earth. That's how they got their expertise to become guides. But some are from other dimensions and have not walked the earth, and they have a lot of wisdom to share. And I open up the same way. It's my grounding, my centering. The spiritualists call it sitting in the power, but I'm not always just sitting in the power. Frankly, walking around all of Mother Nature can be part of my opening up and connecting. And I make the soul-to-soul connection. Now, I've done so much studies. I've studied the spiritualist ways. I've sat in development circle. I've studied with mentors and tutors. But what I found is that in teaching my own students, everybody finds his or her own unique way to ground, center, and open. Some like to be very, very still. Some like to dance around in music. Whatever it is that you feel lifts you up is great. But I try to not let people get bogged down in to which clair am I using right now. I was on this program. It's a feature-length film on Amazon Prime called I Want to Talk to the Dead, with a really, really well done by a producer named Craig McMahon. And I asked him to bring my students on to talk about the different ways that they receive information, and they did a really good job on it. I teach them, though, Simon, which clairs they are and how you recognize them. And then I say, now forget about all that. Because here's what happens. Someone will say, I'm so disappointed. My clairvoyance is great, but my clairsentience just isn't there. Or I wish I could get clairaudience, but I never seem to hear anything. And so it's just like Mark Twain said, comparison is the death of joy. Please don't compare yourself in your development to anyone else. And please don't like wish for or pray for strength in a clair. Just do the work, do the right thing every single day, and it will come. Now, for me, I'm using them all. I would say the very first one that started for me was very much the clairvoyance because of all the things I could see. But I use them all. I love them all. I'm grateful for them all. And I also scribble a lot when I'm receiving information. You will see me on a stage. I will never quit platform mediumship demos. I will never quit. I'm ready to get back on that stage because that energy, that feeling is like walking in heaven, receiving all that energy coming through you. But even on the stage, Simon, my method requires me to have a pen and paper to scribble. And sometimes I'll show it to the audience. I'll hold it up and I'll say, oh, I see a birth date and it's July 4th or 5th, whatever. And I'll hold it up, see? And all the audience sees is all these scribbles, but I see words coming out of that. So I guess the whole point is do your studies, do all of your development work, and then accept your gifts as they are. Don't try to define them. Don't try to contain them. Just be them.
Hello, listeners. This is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyse what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. And what about discernment, you might call it? How do you know that what is coming through isn't just your imagination?
That is difficult. That comes with time and with practice. Number one, with time and with practice. I always tell people, if you want to do this professionally, you don't do it professionally until your teacher says you're ready. Because early on, confabulation can be a big factor. Like when I sit with a student or I listen to their recordings of their practice sessions, I get this feeling of spirits around them. They're connected, or I can feel when the link breaks and they're not connected anymore, but they still keep going. They think, oh, I'm on fire. I'm really connected. You have to learn when the link is ended. You have to learn that feeling. And so discerning whether it's your imagination or real is about know thyself. Know how you feel when the information comes through. Know how you feel when the information has ended. And don't pull on the spiritual energy to get more. And I see a lot of that with people who are not connecting for their own benefit. If you're connecting with your own loved ones, it's different. But the professionals will worry so much about pleasing the sitter sometimes that they'll pull and pull on the energy, or they'll let the sitter take control of the session, which is dangerous. If you let the sitter say, ask his favorite color, well, he bloody well may not care about what his favorite color used to be on earth. And he didn't rehearse how to get that through. But the novice will think, oh, I've got to please my sitter. What's your favorite color? What's your favorite color? And they're pulling and pulling on the energy. And that's the surest way to break the connection. So it's practice. It's don't demonstrate. First rule is do no harm. So, and I think in the United States, we have a lot of well-meaning people who are not really talented as mediums and shouldn't be practicing. And I'm sure that happens all over the world, but especially here, because now it's about the pursuit of ego a lot. It's about the pursuit of fame, like the TV mediums. So discernment comes with time, with practice, with great teachers, with failures, with recognizing that you're not always going to connect. Don't try. Please let that be okay. And frankly, it's never about the medium, is it?
People come and go and see a medium, they come and see you. If you could give advice to people right now of how to be a sitter, because it's not like anybody ever gets trained for that. And I heard saying that was never feed the medium. And there's this idea they'll be sitting at home and go, right, if the medium says the word eggs, I know they're really coming through. I want to hear the word eggs from the medium. And then they leave they never hear the word eggs. And they think, oh, that medium's a fake because I didn't hear eggs. And it's just crazy, I suppose.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? Just to pick up on that very last point, and well, I'll continue with eggs as an example.
Right.
I've gone through an entire session, and just as we're about to close Zoom, or just as they're about to walk out of the office, I'll go, oh, by the way, she's showing me eggs. I don't know what that means. It seems kind of crazy, but I'll just give you that. And the person goes, oh, it is real. So sometimes they do get it. But do you see what spirit would do there? They would concentrate on what they wanted to get through first. What if I didn't have any energy left? What if I was depleted as that session was ending? And I didn't get that message through. So listen, sitters out there, first off, stop getting so many readings. Learn how to do this yourself. Now, if you're going to get a reading, why do we use the word reading, Simon? It's not really a reading. It's a discernment. It's a connection. But anyway, we'll use the popular vernacular. Okay, that's fine. First off, you got to release all your expectations. Let it go. You got to realize that no matter how adept this medium is, there are going to be things that either they miss or the spirit simply doesn't care about giving them. They've got other priorities. And you have to realize that the medium has zero control over who connects, how long they stay, and what it is they want to say. However, you want to observe that medium and see how they open up and see how you feel in their presence. You should feel, as a sitter, it's okay to feel a little nervous. Your heart beats a little faster. That's okay. A really well-trained medium will just use that energy, that excitement energy all around. They'll try to put you at ease a little bit at first. You should feel pretty calm around them. You might even feel the presence of spirit there, but then you've got to let go. Because if you're sitting there thinking, say eggs, say eggs, say eggs, and that's going on over and over in your mind, you can actually create a wall around your own energy that makes it hard for the medium to receive anything going on in that room. If you're meeting in person, or anything going on in your head, if you're meeting on Zoom or on phone, can influence that energy. So you just got to be calm, peaceful, and then just speak up and acknowledge what you do recognize as you recognize it. Don't hold back, but don't volunteer more. That's it. That's pretty much it. Everything that you receive should be, in the words of Edgar Cayce, helpful, hopeful, and healing. Nothing scary, bad, evil. If you're hearing anything that makes you uncomfortable, you need to raise your hand and wave and say, excuse me, may I interrupt? And let that medium know. And if you feel like in the first 10 or 15 minutes, this is not for me, let them know right then. Most reputable people will say, okay, I didn't connect, no charge. But if you let the medium go through the whole session and then at the end say, well, that's not what I wanted at all, that's on you. You should have spoken up sooner, or you should have let go of your expectations. It's the best advice in a nutshell that I can give sitters.
Okay. You say in the book that the techniques and advice that are presented in this book come directly from the spirit world. So when you were writing, did you go into a state of connection with the spirit world? And not like automatic writing, I suppose, but they would tell you stuff while you were writing?
Yes, and have me go back and revise. And sometimes it happened in dreams. I would dream a paragraph or a page, and I would be sitting at a table with other beings, some I didn't even recognize, but I felt calm and peaceful in their presence. They go, you got to put this in, you got to put that in. Now, we can argue that that was just my higher self, or that was my mind. I don't care. I'll take it however it comes, because it was constructive, helpful, hopeful, and healing. Other times, my guide, Leo Roy, or LR as I call him, he's always directly at my right-hand side. I'll stop and ask a question. Was that clear? Was that vague? So I will call my guides editors. How's that? I had the best editors one could possibly have. Was it channeled work? No. My understanding of channeled work is that someone can go into a trance and not even know what they've written. And I was pretty much aware of what I was writing, but I would get corrected, edited, appended through this team. And then I also asked, over the course of a few years, I keep this journal, any spirit that I made a contact with who gave great evidence, was such a great communicator, and we really seemed to be on the same plane of thought, I would run things by them and just say, if any of you are out there and want to weigh in on this, what is it? You know, what is it that really works? What are you guys doing from your side? And I learned that there are, in the spirit world, there are those whose job it is to help get the communications through. And in the about 200 years of research into the afterlife, we find that to be true. I mean, you think of a lot of the experimental sittings that have gone on, the spirit world has had controls come through in trance. A control comes through first and says, I'm helping the next person. This next person is coming through. We need to share this information, because there has been this fallacy that once a loved one leaves their body, they become all-knowing. They can come through whenever they want. They can do it on demand. and I can ask for exactly what I want, and they should do it right away, or maybe they don't love me anymore, or maybe they didn't make it to the other side. And we scare ourselves in this unhealthy thinking. There's a process that the so-called dead, many of whom are way more lively than the so-called living, in my opinion, but there's a process that they go through. There are rehearsals. There are people they connect with over there that help them. And we need to be patient and playful. Come at this with joy and a sense of humor. Allow it to unfold, as opposed to, I've got to get this, I've got to get this. And what that means, Simon, is when somebody's really tense and intense about getting a direct contact or an ADC or after-death communication, they haven't grieved sufficiently. And it can be withheld from them. That sign, symbol, synchronicity, dream visit, it can be like, okay, we're on standby. We got to wait until Suzanne is more calm and she's cried some more and she's processed some more, and let her grieve, honor the grief. Grief is part of the human experience, and then we'll come through. So it's all about timing and recognizing these things happen in God's time, not ours.
You talk about how you should have a joy and almost like a sense of humor. And I take people through past life regressions. I'm a hypnotherapist, and we frequently communicate with spirit guides, and they come forward, and often they do jokey things and they have a laugh, and it's almost like they're trying to put this message across. It's like, it's not all serious and solemn in the afterlife. We're having fun as well.
Yes, well said. And it's not just about raising your vibration or tuning into a different frequency. It's about sharing their joy. I don't know who said this. Maybe you'll know where this originated from, but there's a saying that goes a little bit like this, that when someone dies in the physical world, we mourn and the other side rejoices. And when someone is born in the physical world, we rejoice and the other side mourns, because that soul is away. But we're always somewhere, aren't we? And I did the certification. I went back to school and did all my hours of getting the clinical hypnotherapy certification as well. And I chose only to do past life regressions. I don't have much time to do them anymore. But I will tell you that I think it can be so much better than a mediumship reading. It's just like, it's part of why I do the Ask the Spirit Guides sessions. I think the past life therapy and talking to the guides can give you a lot of insight about yourself. The evidential mediumship is to help you know that our consciousness lives forever, that your departed loved one is still part of your life and always will be. And then you should know that and accept that and work on yourself and self-actualize, identify your gifts, bring them to bear. And that's why I firmly believe in connecting with guides and getting past life regressions, so that you can know yourself better. And those who seek evidential mediumship should understand that it's just a spoke in a wheel of healing grief. It's not meant to magically transform your life. It's just meant to prove to you that your loved one continues to exist. That's all it is. And sometimes the expectations are just, it's not what they should have. Some people really need grief therapy, but they go to a medium. Some people really need help with anxiety, but they go to a medium. That's not what it's for. Our job, if we're doing evidential mediumship, it's for one thing. It's to prove that the consciousness survived physical death. That's it. And then there are all these other therapies, and I'm so glad that even your show is called the Past Lives Podcast. We need to be focusing on who we are and what we can bring to this chaotic, crazy world we call Earth, so that when we get home, to the other side of life, that's the real home. This is the experience. This life is the experience. We get home, it's integration time. We integrate everything we learned about ourselves, everything we learned about the world. Did we learn to regulate our emotions? Well, we did a little bit better this time than before. Or nope, we didn't, but we learned something else. And we're not being judged so much as we're looking for those little kernels of light that got in this existence that maybe didn't get in to our souls in prior existences. And we're so appreciated when we get to the other side. Just think of it, 200 years of afterlife research documented. Before the internet, mediums in different continents were bringing through exact same information about what the other side of life is like. We're no longer having these discussions about, is the afterlife real? We're having discussions about what it's like and how do we get into a newer community, a newer to us community when we go to the other side, because our vibration is going to take us where we belong. Our aura is going to transport us where we belong when we get to the other side. And I want my aura to be beautiful. I want it to be, you know, there's going to be what I call spiritual dust bunnies, you know, where we've held on to anger, where we've held on to being humiliated by someone, or let's say you got ripped off in business, or you had a bad relationship that ended poorly or whatever, some things you're not proud of, some things were done to you. You don't want to arrive on the other side of life with all those spiritual dust bunnies stuck to you, because you'll have some work to do on yourself when you first get there. You want to arrive on the other side with those war wounds as little tiny tears, holes, little tiny rips in the aura, so that you know you've really lived, as opposed to you've held on to her. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. If we could talk about your near-death experience now, was that a extensive or was it a small experience? What happened there?
I was in an allergy specialist's office having allergy tests, and I had a huge, huge reaction. It was my second trip back, and they said, we're increasing the dosages here, and they were punching the dosages into my arm, and all of a sudden I got very warm, and the technician said, well, maybe you're having a hot flash, which I didn't appreciate, but I just kind of giggled along with, okay. I said, my stomach hurts. She just kept punching away, and my arm turned like reddish purple. And all of a sudden I said, I'm nauseated, go get help. And my throat started honking like a goose. She left me to get help. And by the time two doctors came in and now another technician, there's four people, I was hearing, hold her up, hold her up. And they had a technician on each side of me holding me up by the shoulders. And then they went into slow motion. There was like this final honking, and it really is loud when your throat closes. It did honk like a goose, and then it stopped. And I felt my heart rate go down, down, down. And I'm hearing and I'm feeling the beats of my heart, and it stopped. And then all of a sudden, these doctors in the room were in slow motion, and they looked kind of scary to me. Or I should say unreal. They looked unreal. They looked like cardboard cutout characters, one very flat, dead eyes, shiny. I'm like, yeah, wow, this isn't real. But I popped, like I heard a pop, and I popped backwards out of the body and a little bit above. Then I felt the arms, these arms of comforting me around me, around whatever this was, this body I'm in now. And I looked at myself, and all I was just thinking about how the back of me looked. I noticed, you know, and my hair didn't look good on the back of my head. And then I realized how weird it was to be looking at the back of my head. And I heard music, I saw colors, and I recognized the arms around me as my grandfather, my first mentor. in my spiritual life, I wanted to go to where that music was. I thought he was going to take me to where that music was coming from. I'm musical. I play several instruments, mostly piano. So for those listeners who are musical, this was all major keys in a going up octaves each time in waves. It was like voices being instruments. I don't know how to explain that.
So it wasn't like classical music or rock music. Mm-mm. Or anything you...
No, it was, gosh, it's so hard, so hard to explain. I remember one time I was working with a woman from the BBC, and she was trying to put together what sounds people heard in NDEs. And she really struggled with this, but there were characteristics in common about the waves that felt like waves. And that's how it felt, but I didn't get to go to where the music was coming from. It was very disappointing. I wanted to walk through those colors. I wanted to be with my grandfather. And a different voice came in. It wasn't his voice, but it was a very, like, I think of it as like robotic and kind of a grating voice, said that my work hadn't started. And they were giving me my body an injection. And with the injection, I got sucked back into the body, and the body was very painful. Even as I tell you this, Simon, I think of it as the body.
Not your body, but the body.
Not my body, the body. And I'm finding that I'm covered in goosebumps thinking about that. Like, I was so disassociated in literally, what, a minute or two at the most? So hey, listen, if you're going to have a near-death experience, have it in a doctor's office, right? They're going to bring you right back. Unless, of course, it's your time to go. But so they give me the shot. I'm back in. I feel like my body's on fire, my chest, like an elephant sitting on it. And the doorway come these paramedics. And I have a hard time saying this word. I'm going to slow down. But they had the machine. Defibrillator. Did I say it right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so too. Okay. And they're coming at me with this. And it wasn't necessary. But I did have to go to the hospital. And it was that instant. And here's where I'm really going with this. More than just the experience. But it was that instance of going into the ambulance and wondering, and this is a new insight I got recently, wondering, can I still die? You know, they gave me this injection, I'm breathing, my throat's not closing. I wonder if I can still die. It would be nice to go to that music. It would be nice to be there. Because I was in my corporate life mostly at that point in 2007. This was a secret. My abilities were a secret. I was working under just my first my nickname and last initial, doing readings on weekends. I was working on a doctorate degree. I had a full-time corporate job, and I compartmentalized before NDE. But even in the ambulance right after, I was like, you know, if I can't die, I can still connect with this, and I can do it every day, and I don't have to tell anybody. So the new insight I think that's come up just recently is that the NDE is a gift to speed us up on the self-actualization path. That it wasn't so, it's not just, I don't want to be too reductionist here, but it's not just an experience to like a wake up call. It's more like your own soul is going to now prod you to bring your A game to this life, whatever that is. And it's not about making money. It's not about promotions. It's not about the big house or car. It's about the big talent within you, the big gift, music, art, being a good listener, whatever it is. If you don't get it then, you're never going to get it.
Do you feel that, I suppose that having a near-death experience wasn't part of the plan? If you could make a plan of your life before you were born, is it for some people, perhaps they've gone way off plan and the spirit guides that are up there looking down saying, oh, we've got to do something. We've got to get them back on their path.
And that's one way of looking at it. And it could be also that I've heard that we have update meetings. And of course, I remember a lot of mine. And a lot of people have them during astral travel. They'll have sort of like a little life, mini life review during living this life. And maybe we consented, or maybe we even suggested, look, I need a wake-up call. The wake-up calls can be pretty simple. You don't have to almost die. I have a friend who, somebody broke into her house, and she thought, you know, my family could die. This is a home invasion. They grabbed a bunch of stuff out of the living room, took the TV and some electronic stuff and took off. And all of a sudden she's like, you've got to help me. I'm seeing colors around people. Like, that was her wake up call, you know, something. But when it comes to planning and this, and the soul, my current opinion, it continues to be what I have derived from my own research and my own experiences. And I don't know if it's correct, but I feel like we don't plan every little detail, and that if there is a plan, it's malleable based on what's happening because we have free will all the time. And I know there are those who say, well, I planned to get married at this age. I planned how many kids. I planned my career. I planned this. I planned exactly when I'm going to die. And I just don't buy it because it negates free will. But I do think we continue after birth during our lives to mold that plan, whether it's on the subconscious level, and you work with the subconscious with people all the time, or whether it's our guides coming up with the idea. I feel like our soul still has to have some kind of input. It'll be interesting when we get to the other side and we compare what we think we know with what really is, won't it?
Yeah, I expect it's going to be a lot different. Almost, you know, the human brain can't comprehend what it is. When you get there. It's going to be very complicated. And it's like you say, you might have these mini life reviews as you're going along. And it almost sounds like a corporate thing, you know, where you have your weekly meetings. But I'm sure it's not quite like that.
Right. And it could happen in an instant. Like, some of the conversations that we have in spirit form seem to happen so telepathically. A conversation that might take an hour, and you see this even in a reading, details that you might ask 5 or 6 or 10 questions to get, you get it instantaneously. So just think about when we get to the other side, we know each other. We hear and feel each other in an instant. So it's not going to be what we think it is. It's going to be so much more and so much better. That's my humble opinion.
So earlier you talked about your grandfather and how he was your first mentor. Could you tell us how he guided you? What did he do?
I'll start with what his work was. He, after getting out of the army, he became a minister, a Presbyterian minister. And my dad was out of the picture early. My mom and I lived in the manse. That's the house that the church provides the preacher. So I lived with my grandparents for many years until my mom remarried. She would go, remarried. I was married before. Don't say that on the radio. It's like, Okay, mom. Mom's old school, but mom talks to angels, so she's not that conservative. But it runs in families, Simon. You know that. So I grew up with him, and when he saw me getting bullied at school, he saw me coming home with skinned knees, and he would ask me, "Well, what were you playing? What were you doing?" And I'm like, "Oh, nothing, nothing." And then I started faking sick to not go to school. And so my mom was like, "You talk to her. She'll talk to you. She's not telling me what's going on." And I told him the things I was seeing around the other kids. And I thought I might get in trouble. And to my relief and utter shock, he says, "I see things like that too." And thus began very, very, very long conversations about God, about the angels, about where we go. I was able to tell him that when he performed a funeral, I went to all the funerals he did, and I loved them because I could see the deceased standing by the coffin. I could see the deceased walking around in the congregation. I could see how great they looked. Sometimes they noticed that I could see them, and they said hello. So I would tell him things. I would tell him about the light I saw around him in the when he was in the pulpit giving his sermon. I told him on Saturdays I would be in his study, little kid on the floor with the coloring books and colors, the crayons, the pencils, and he would sit with a pad of paper and a pen, like I do now, receiving messages. And this big light would come into the room, and that's when he wrote his sermon. And the light would leave, and that's when he put the pen down. So I grew up thinking that the light came and gave the preacher the sermon. That's how it works. And he taught me that I did have to be careful about telling people the things I saw, but I had to also realize that the ability had to be used in a certain way. And it was to help other people. And it was from God. And that it was not special, that everybody has something special. I'm not above anybody else. And even as a minister, he wasn't above or greater than anyone else. It was just a really good grounding, Simon. It was a really good way. And if not for him, I might have just been a neurotic mess or, committed to an asylum or some darn thing in the 70s, So I'm really, really grateful to him. But he left the earth when I was about 15. And I don't see a whole lot of him anymore, but when I really, really need him, he's there.
Tell the story in your book about how he came to visit you, and it was later you'd found out he died, and it was before he visited you. So he was coming to you in
Yeah.
spirit form.
And I knew days before that he was only 56 and he seemed in good health. And I knew days before, and we had moved about 50 miles away. And if I had had my driver's license, I would have driven to see him. But my mom put him on the phone and I said, "Granddad, I keep having these dreams that you've passed." And I told the whole family. He's like, "I'm fine. I'm not going anywhere." But he had always said, "I won't be here for some of your special days in your life. I won't be in my body, but I'll be there." And I'm thinking, gosh, is he going to be here for my high school graduation when I get married someday? He always knew that. But here he was on the phone, and I'm telling him, "No, you're going to die." And he was saying, "No, I'm not. I'm fine." He didn't. He had a total unawareness of it, that it was about to happen. And then when it did, he came to me first before the phone call came in that he passed. And we danced like we had danced at all the father-daughter dances, because he had belonged to every community organization in that town. And whenever they had dances, I was his dance partner. And I think it was because it was something that we shared, it was a way to say goodbye, just to dance one more time. And he told me everything would be okay, but God had called him home. And I wanted to argue. So I am crying my eyes out after he leaves that room. And I heard the phone ring a moment later, and I heard my mother scream. And when she walked into the room, she said, "You know, don't you?" So after that, everybody listened to me with my predictions. And that was a hard one. That was really hard, but his work was done. I feel like he's so busy on the other side. It just makes you wonder more what we do over there, but he's always busy. You know, do you ever hear from people on the other side, your own people, what they're doing or what they're up to? Or do you like get hits on that yourself? Because you're very intuitive.
No, I don't. No.
Never? I think some of it we just wouldn't understand. We wouldn't have a context for. You know, I hear about symphonies, and but they don't always have to have instruments. Maybe that's how they make that heavenly music. I don't know. I think, like you said earlier, we don't have a framework to understand a lot of things over there. It's just not that simple. But it's very, very beautiful. And we have so much to look forward to, don't we?
We're running out of time now, and it's been great talking to you.
It went so fast.
Yeah. The book is called Soul Smart, What the Dead Teach Us About Spirit Communication. And can you tell us about your website and what you're doing now?
Yes, please visit carefreemedium.com. And if you sign up for the newsletter, I've got a wonderful meditation called The Daily Peace. I've got a very brief ebook written with Dr. Victor Zammit and Wendy Zammit called When Your Partner Doesn't Believe in the Afterlife, that could help you. But we have a great community called the Carefree Souls, and classes and sharing. And it's all about growth and support in a safe and sometimes very humorous community where we can laugh at ourselves. We can share experiences and find your tribe, whether it's my tribe or somebody else's tribe, but find your tribe, because it is a rough world out there. But I look forward to seeing you guys either at a live event again, hello, they're back, or online. And you can check me out at superpowerfilm.com. There's a beautiful series with people like Dean Radin and Bruce Lipton, Susan Shumsky, Nassim Haramein. We have a lot of great things going on, a lot of great content out there.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast. It's been really great talking to you.
I'm really grateful that we made this work with the time differences and all. It's a pleasure. I appreciate you, Simon. Keep doing your hypnosis. It's really important work.
Thanks. And that was an interview with Susan J. Wilson about her book, Soul Smart, What the Dead Teach Us About Spirit Communication. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. This is the free 1 hour version of the episode. The extended episode is 1 hour and 24 minutes. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week and the back catalogue of extended episodes. Also, if you're a patron, you get a 25% discount when you book a past life regression session with me. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday, and you can find it on almost every podcast app. My Instagram is the Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word, and on Twitter I am at Simon G. Bowne. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.